Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Unintended Consequences. I am one of your co-hosts, Arden O'Connor, and joined by my co-host, Diana. Welcome, Diana and Emma. We are so excited to have you today.
I'm really excited to be here. I also have to tell you guys, today is my birthday.
Happy birthday! What a way to celebrate.
Right?
I know. I couldn't think of a better way.
Lynn, let's try and have some fun in this conversation because you shouldn't have to do anything that isn't fun today. All right?
That's right. For our listeners and our viewers today, I am really honored to be introducing you, Emma. I have shared a little bit publicly on a different podcast called Storked about my own fertility journey that started with me having cancer and ended with me having two healthy baby girls via surrogate, egg donor, sperm donor. And we are proud parents, my fiance and I, and excited about the future for our girls. But I want to talk to you today, Emma, about your own journey, because as we know, this is something that's not covered enough. Most of us women who are not able to conceive or have our own alternative ways of building families for whatever reason, there can be stigma attached to it. There can be shame. And you come from a family in the public profile. Your husband is a NFL football player for the Colts, and I know you had your own journey. So I'm going to start by just asking you, can you tell us a little bit about what your journey was and how specifically being in the public eye impacted the way you and your husband had to deal with fertility issues?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just going to start off by saying, like, if there were a trauma bingo card for the journey to parenthood, I think Ryan and I have pretty much hit every square in it. I make kind of light of it, but it's been a very, very tough journey for us. And so my husband and I got married in 2021, had this big magical wedding. We somehow like escaped the woes of COVID. We kind of skated by the skin of our teeth, got our beautiful dream wedding. And then I'm about to say this, like I used to joke, like he sneezed on me and we got pregnant with our first just months after getting married. You know, we thought we were so naive. We thought we could control the whole situation. We were like, we're going to take this year to travel and soak in marriage. And for anyone who understands the NFL life, this was during camp. So my husband was away from home for a month and a half. So we had like one visit where he got to come home. I kind of joke it was our conjugal visit. And somehow we ended up pregnant. I mean, this was the only time we saw each other from the end of July through Labor Day. And I just was so naive to, which I think a lot of us are in society, like we don't do a good enough job. Everyone just thinks when you're ready, you just try and it happens. And so I didn't understand ovulation. I wasn't tracking anything. Like we just weren't trying. And so it was quite a shock to learn that we were pregnant. And it was a beautiful shock. My husband and I always talked about wanting a family. It was something that's always been a deep desire of mine and his. And so you're riding this high of your wedding, and then 3 months later, you find out you're pregnant. So we were kind of on top of the world. You know, he's going into, I think, year 7 with the Colts for this. We're going into season. A lot of amazing stuff happening. And at this time, HBO decided to do their first season of Hard Knocks in season, and they wanted to feature the Colts. So when they had found out that Ryan and I were pregnant, so part of the show was not only to highlight who these guys are on the field, but to highlight them and their families off the field. That was a big part of this show. And so HBO approached us and said, we heard you're pregnant. Do you care if we film this and include this in our storyline? And so my husband and I were like, yes, you know, we're on cloud 9. We're so excited. We want the world to know about our daughter. And it never even occurred to me. I didn't even know what stillbirth was. You know, miscarriage was in the land far away. I knew about it. I hadn't really heard or been close to anyone who experienced. I later now know that that's just because people don't talk about it, but it happens a lot more than we think. But so I just was in this very naive bubble and it didn't even occur to me, you know, no one's talking to you, your OBGYN, your healthcare, no one's really talking to you about what could happen in your pregnancy. So it never occurred to me. And we, with open arms, invited HBO and the world into our pregnancy in December. So we had just done our gender reveal back in October. We found out that we were having a girl. We did it in the stadium. HBO aired it. It was the happiest day of our life. My husband always said he wanted to be a girl dad. I'm one of three girls. it just was magical. So we had it lit up in the stadium. You know, it's a girl in pink in the Colts stadium. And so that's how we learned we were having our Mary-Kate. And it just, like I said, you know, you're just at an all-time high.
So when did you realize something wasn't right with your pregnancy?
I was about 19 weeks, 5 days, almost halfway through my pregnancy. I noticed some spotting, which can be common, but I hadn't experienced any in my pregnancy, so I knew immediately something was wrong. I did know enough to call the hospital and just say, this doesn't feel right. I mean, there was nothing else. And later I would learn to, again, this was my first pregnancy. I knew nothing, but some of my symptoms had started to disappear. Like my breasts were extremely tender, all that. So those had gone away. And I, you know, I had just done a stupid Google thing and it was like, that can happen. Or, you know, you just get this wide range of stuff. So you're like, I'm probably fine. Don't know what to expect. So that had happened a couple of days prior. Fast forward, it's Friday. I noticed some spotting. I go into triage and I was by myself. My husband had just been out. He had just missed quite a bit of practice for illness. So I didn't want to bother him. So I was in there by myself and the tech comes in, you know, she's commenting, very cheery, very bubbly. And then she just goes silent. And she's like, you know what? I'm new here. I'm just going to go get the doctor really quickly. Brings back the doctor and the doctor just very matter-of-factly said, I'm sorry, there's no heartbeat. And so that was it. You know, all of your hopes and dreams for this little person just kind of end right there in that room. So we learned that we had lost our daughter for reasons unknown. And then they just said, you know, just again, very matter-of-factly, you can walk next door and deliver her. If you want to go home, do you have any family members? If you do, if you want to bring them back, you can go home, shower, come back, bring your family with you, but you do have to deliver. You're too far along. So just thinking back and where we are now, I just don't even know how to describe. And if anyone has been through this one time or multiple, it's the worst pain you can imagine. And it's just so isolating. You know, like as women, we tend to take on a lot. So I just remember thinking, like, what did I do to cause this? You know, I couldn't think of a single person who had ever experienced this. So that would just start a very long, very scary, very isolating, very dark journey for Ryan and I as we tried to process that.
I'm so sorry for your loss. I can't even imagine how devastating it must be. What was your process to deciding in terms of continuing to build your family? Or how did you decide to continue having children?
You know, not to skate over anything else, but we lost our daughter and then we would go on for the next year and a half, almost struggling with infertility. So we gave ourselves the time for myself to kind of heal. You know, her delivery was very rough. I did have to deliver my daughter, Mary-Kate. And so after that, we gave ourselves the time to heal, but we were just so brokenhearted and desperate. And once you find out you're having a child, and like I said, it's something we've always wanted, and that was taken from us, that's all my husband and I could focus on, was just how badly we wanted to be parents again. And so when we were given that time to heal, we were like, let's go. So it was probably just over a year after I had healed and kind of given ourselves some time to process our loss that we started trying again.
It sounds like having your sons had some challenges as well. Can you walk us through that piece of your journey?
You know, the first couple months, you try and tell yourself like, oh, we'll just see what happens, right? And then it doesn't happen. And then you become kind of crazy. I became kind of crazed and just fixated, obsessed on it, just tracking everything, supplements, you know, I'm seeing every doctor under the sun, just trying to figure out. And we never did get any answers, by the way. You know, Ryan and I, our levels show that they were what they should be and everything was what it should be. We just couldn't get pregnant. They couldn't figure it out. And so we tried for a while. And this is something I just want to bring up too, because I struggled greatly with IVF, the idea of it. My husband and I are very faithful. We're spiritual people. We believe in God. And so I wrestled big time with, are we taking this into our own hands and trying to blame God here? And I just want to say that IVF is such a gift. So luckily, Ryan and I had incredible mentors who, when I told this to them, they were like, you know, are you crazy? Doctors, we very much believe in science and are grateful for it. But it's like these doctors are blessed and they have these gifts because of God. And so this isn't you going to them and accepting or saying that you need help. Isn't you playing God? It's you opening yourself to God and these people that he's gifted who are here to help you. And so that kind of changed everything for me. So we went from fighting it to feeling all this shame. Why can't my body do this? It did it on its own with Mary Kate. And also my sisters were pregnant with me at the time with Mary Kate. They went on to have their beautiful, healthy babies. And, you know, you're just wrestling a lot. And then it seems to be happening for everyone on the planet. It's just what it feels like at the time. So it's not happening for you. It's all you want. It's all you can think about. And it seems to be happening for everyone else. And then, so it's just the shame I felt in that, right? Like, I'm not good enough. My body's not good enough. All of these horrible feelings that aren't true at all, right? And so sometimes we just need a little help.
That's right.
For reasons we may or may not know. And I think there's so much beauty and healing and just opening up and saying, I can't do this on my own. I need help. And the second Ryan and I got to that place, magical things started to happen. So Ryan and I, after we found a great doctor, he walked us through our options. We ended up going through IVF. We did IVF. And so in January, we implanted two baby boys. Or we didn't know. I'm sorry. I know them now, but we wanted to do fresh. That was kind of important for me.
Sure.
You know, just for our own personal reasons, we were like, let's do fresh if we can. And to be honest, we would have done whatever it took just to get our babies. But that was our first choice priority. So we implanted our two embryos, and we would later find out that both of them stuck, which is such a miracle. And so both stuck. And then later we would find out that we were having two boys, which was so beautiful and also kind of, it's not heartbreaking, but I had lost a girl. You know, I just thought we were going to be a girl mom. It never occurred to me that I could have two boys. So, which is so funny because I have them now and they're unbelievable and I needed both of them so badly. But in that moment, that was almost like another loss in itself, just learning we were going to have two boys. And then, so during my pregnancy, I had a pretty wonderful pregnancy. Pregnancy after loss is just a beast in itself. So I mean, like physically, I had a pretty great pregnancy, but you're battling a lot, right? Just the fear of loss and knowing it and what could happen kind of strips away that blissful pregnancy bubble. And so mentally, it was very, very tough on me, but physically, it was pretty great. And then at 27 weeks pregnant, we were out of town. We were in Nashville for one of my good friend's wedding. And I went into labor, just to cut to the chase, started experiencing symptoms. I knew it wasn't good. So we got off the shuttle for our friend's wedding, rushed to the hospital out of state with no family, no friends really in town, like outside of everyone in town for the wedding. Didn't know any of the staff. And I walked in and the head of fetal medicine came in and she was just like, you know, if it's not hours, it's days. Your babies are coming. And so she said, you need to prepare to be here for 6 months. You know, I don't know what your situation. I know you guys don't live here, but you need to be here for 6 months. If your boys see this through, if they're healthy, if they make it through, they're going to be in the NICU for quite a bit. So again, you know, just 1 minute you're on this kind of high and then the next your world is just flipped upside down. And so, you know, I just remember laying in that bed like, here we go again, you know, like, and I remember the only thing I could like muster in that time was just like, God, let my babies live. I don't care what you do to me. I don't care what happens. You just let these babies live, please. And so the other thing that was pretty tough in this time is naturally we're 3 weeks outside of camp for football, NFL. The season is getting ready to start. Again, I mentioned camp because your significant other goes away for a month and a half to train. They've got their 3 days. They're offsite, not allowed to come home. So not only are our sons, they're in the NICU on life support, but I'm about to lose my husband. We made the decision that Ryan was going to go back to play football. So we knew there was nothing really he could do, that I was there, I was going to be there for the boys, and he needed to go back and be there for the team and for the season. And, you know, for anyone who doesn't understand that, the NFL is amazing. There's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of sacrifice involved too. This is my husband's livelihood. It is our livelihood. And so this is his job, his whole career. And so the NFL doesn't care, whatever your situation is.
If something went wrong.
Yeah. And then these are our children. They don't care. Like your husband or your significant other, the player, is expected to show up and do their job. So that is the trade-off to it that I don't think a lot of people understand. So I say that with all the gratitude in my heart for my husband's job. Like I said, like there's so many opportunities. This is unfortunately one of the really, really hard parts of the NFL. So Ryan went back to Indianapolis. I stayed in the NICU in Tennessee with our boys. And just by the grace of God, we pulled through. I mean, my boys were in there for 3 months and they got out happy and healthy as ever. I mean, if and when you see them today, you would never know. So they're the two strongest little guys I know. And they're just like our lights. They are just two of the happiest, best guys. And so we got through that. And then we got home. I probably got home in October. And then 2 months later, we were getting ready for my husband to go to the Pro Bowl. And so it's like the end of January. And I come down, you know, I wasn't feeling well, but I was just thinking, I've just been through an insane amount of stress. We just got home from with our boys in the NICU. Like there's so much going on. But I remember we were bathing our boys one night before, you know, our big trip. And I almost got sick all over my son's head. And so I'm just like, wait a second. And so I run into the bathroom. I'm like, there's no way. I mean, I truly meant there was no way. The last thing on earth I thought I was pregnant. But I was like, let's just see. Because just truthfully, after everything that we had been through, we had just gone through IVF. We had just tried with all of our might to get pregnant on our own, unsuccessfully, just went through IVF, just went through the NICU. My cortisol levels were probably off the charts. And so I'm like, there's just no way. And so I go to the bathroom. I dust off a pregnancy test that was probably 2 years old, you know, just because. And sure enough, it turned positive in seconds. And that's when we learned that we had conceived our newborn baby girl, Stella, naturally. And so the whirlwind of highs and lows through our journey through parenthood. And then I'm sitting here telling you, I just gave birth to my daughter 2 weeks ago. She's here. She's healthy, full term. It was the most beautiful pregnancy. I finally got to have a redemptive birth, got to do it my way. And I don't want to fixate on that, right? Because after everything we've been through, just bringing your child into the world is wonderful and enough. And however we bring our child into the world is beautiful and amazing. So I just say, though, that it was a trauma-free birth, and I can't believe it. So that is our very long-winded history of our journey to parenthood. I sit here now after losing our first stillbirth, going through IVF, having our beautiful baby twin boys very scarily, very early, with quite a bit of NICU time, and then just conceiving our daughter at the most unimaginable time. My boys were 4 or 5 months old and technically, you know, adjusted because they were born so early. You've got that. They were like 1 month adjusted. And now we have our beautiful baby girl, Stella. And so it's just very full circle. And I'm so grateful to sit here and tell you that because we sat through 2 or 3 years of just hard no's or just unanswered prayers and really, really hard feelings and circumstances.
Well, there's so much there. And first of all, I'm so sorry for your loss. I know in our discussions before we launched the podcast, I shared that I went through a stillbirth with a surrogate who was pregnant and lost the baby at 36 weeks. And one of the things that shocked me is when you're talking, you know, when I associate stillbirths or when I associate a pregnancy gone awry, which is how I simply put it in my mind, I think about that happening at 6 weeks, which is why you don't say anything until 12 weeks. And so in my mind, once you get past that 12-week mark, living in a developed country like the U.S. with allegedly a great healthcare system, you don't assume anything's going to be wrong. And similar to you, when we did 2 consults with maternal fetal medicine specialists, and neither could point to a cause for why the stillbirth happened. And so it's interesting to hear some of the parallels. It's also so important, I think, to voice these things, because what most people want to talk about are the joys of being pregnant, the joys of having a child. And while I didn't carry the child, which to me is unimaginable loss, to actually have to physically give birth, our surrogate had to do that. And I remember trying to support her through the process. It was not easy for her. But you really mourn the loss of being a parent. I mean, I remember vividly crying the next day hysterically. And I was on the phone with surrogacy agencies within 24 hours saying, I want to get back. I know this is going to take a while. I want to start this again. Because not only was I losing a daughter that I envisioned, but I was losing the idea of becoming a mom, which similar to you, I became a mom later in life. I'm in my later 40s, although I'm very reluctant to admit it. And, you know, at that time, you think it was going to happen. One of the questions I have is, as you think back in terms of the coverage and you and Ryan, how did you deal with it at the marriage level? Because I think we spend so much time thinking about the trauma that it impacts, and it's certainly true. But even with the best bonds, I've got to imagine it's got to be very difficult.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's another thing that no one talks about, is the toll that it takes on your marriage. And again, just all of the emotions and feelings that you have to work through. But to keep it light, the best advice Ryan and I ever got was, so Ryan and I, after we lost her about a month in, we just realized like this wasn't working. I just remember, I'm a very outward, expressive person. You know, I was crying, I was screaming, I'm angry, and I'm very expressive. And he wasn't. And so I remember screaming at him, "You don't care as much as I do. Like, why aren't you crying? Why aren't you screaming? Why aren't you mad? Like, you don't love her as much as I do," which I really didn't feel that way, you know, truthfully. But
you didn't have any hormones coursing through you either. Yeah.
I just couldn't understand why he wasn't reacting the way that I did. And I was taking that out on him, and I was holding that against him. And so Ryan and I ended up going to a healing center that had a grief and loss program, because we just flat out realized we couldn't do this ourselves. Like, we couldn't handle this loss by ourselves, and that we really needed some help and someone else to kind of offload this to. And so we saw this counselor, and she said to us that spouses, significant others, partners get in the way of each other's grief, that everyone grieves differently, and that you have to respect that, however it is. And that grief also, it's not linear, and it's not like you're going to hit this at this point, you're going to hit this at this point. I'm hitting the hard feels early on here. My husband would hit them later on. It would affect him differently, because I would later learn that my husband takes his protector role very seriously, and he was so worried about me. He felt that he had to suppress his feelings or emotions to take care of me and keep me afloat. And, you know, I was obviously misconstruing all of that, when really he was just trying to be loving and protective of me and let me have my time. So we learned just to get out of each other's way. And then the other great thing that she said to us was, you need three people, and one of them can be a pet, but three people other than your spouse to share this with. And it can't be just like your best friend. And this is going to upset other people too, but it shouldn't be family members, because family members love us so much, or almost too much, that they can't stand to see us in pain and they want to take our pain away. And so that's why you just need three people outside of your immediate family, because they're also going through it too, right? But just to kind of offload this too, and understand that everyone handles it differently, especially your significant other, and that you need to respect that and let each other grieve the way that they know and feel best is for them. So as soon as we had learned that and kind of adapted it, it changed everything. And it made the situation in our marriage so much lighter. It made it survivable. And it's not to say don't share with your partner. Your partner is your fourth person. You absolutely share it. It's just your partner can't take on all of your grief because they're handling their own. And so that's why you got to have a buddy system, because the other biggest point is none of us can do this alone. We are not meant to. We are not meant to carry loss all on our own. We're not meant to suppress our loss. And I say that with all the love and respect, like how you grieve is your choice. But know that you don't have to do this alone, and you shouldn't, and that there is a lot of healing in sharing whenever you are ready. So having your buddy system and respecting your partner's grief is the key to surviving this together.
So that is such profound advice. It sounds fairly simple, have your buddy, but it also addresses the very isolation that kind of shame and stigma and all of that comes about with the fertility issue. So it tackles not just the idea that you can offload grief, but also that you can connect in really real ways about subjects that people don't connect about. Thank you for that. That's profound.
When you think about women who have gone through an experience like this, and you think about their family and friends group, and I understand completely what you're saying, that you can't get people who are overly invested, but was there anything that somebody said to you in the process that was supportive? You know, "I'm sorry for your loss" is the common phrase, but is there anything that you could think of that you would say, "Hey, you know, I wish someone had said this," or "I wish people had behaved this way"? Because I think people are desperate to be helpful and they're afraid to talk about it.
Yes. So great question. I would say my biggest thing is, and it goes back to what we said, like people trying to take your pain away. None of us want you to take our pain away because our pain equals the love that we have for our baby or for our loss. So don't worry. We don't want you to take our pain away. What we want is for you to acknowledge it, how hard it is, how unfair it is, how cruel it is, and just sit with us in it. The simplest thing is just to say, I'm really sorry this happened. It's so unfair. And then to just say something, you know, all we want to know is that our child is not forgotten or that they count. And that's ultimately when you lose them, you're worried that people won't count them or, you know, people will forget about them. And so it's so as simple as just saying, like, I miss them too. I miss your baby. I wish that they were here too. I wish they could have lived, or just something nice. Like, I really loved her name, you know, something just to acknowledge your baby, their existence. And I just think the other thing, I know people mean well, but they're in a better place. This happened for a reason. Please stop saying those things.
Totally agree.
Because there is no reason or better place that, you know, a child should be with their parent. We very much believe in heaven, but babies shouldn't die. And things don't happen for a reason. And like I said, I know that that comes from a good place and people are trying to be helpful or loving, but it isn't very helpful. It's very hurtful. And so avoiding those phrases and honestly just, you know, acknowledging, like I said, sitting with the person. And my favorite thing was just people sending messages and you don't have to respond, but I'm here when you need me. I'm here to sit with you and cry with you.
Agreed.
Or I'm just here to do whatever it is that you want, kind of let them. And so I think those are very powerful statements and they're very easy and often overlooked, but don't ignore the situation or the loss. Don't try to avoid it. And just acknowledging that it's hard and unfair goes a lot better than the they're in a better place.
Of course. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
The one thing that I just want to say too, though, to reverse this situation is when I went through this, I went through all the emotions, but it never occurred to me. So it wasn't until my sisters sat me down and, you know, I was very bitter that they were going on and continuing their pregnancies. But one of the things that my sister said to me that literally never occurred to me was, we lost someone too. And my sister was just like, Mary Kate was going to make me an aunt. And so I forgot about everyone else's feelings in this and my family's. I was so focused on my own that I think I was hurtful and I wasn't aware that everyone else had also lost someone. My mom lost her grandbaby. My sister lost her niece. You know, it wasn't just me and my husband who lost our person. It was everyone in our family. And so that was something that was very eye-opening to me, was that it wasn't just about us and everyone else is hurting as well.
I think it's a great point. And I think when people see someone they love that much going through it too, you know, I know for me, I don't like to cry in front of people. And so I tend to push people away in those moments. And that's how I was when I found that the baby was gone. But I remember my mom almost being hurt that when she tried to like sit down and talk with me about it, at least for the first day or two, I was like, I can't. The only people, it wasn't even people, the only beings I could be around were my animals, my three dogs. I just couldn't even talk about it. And I didn't have the energy to console somebody else. But to your point about being hurtful, I didn't mean to be, but I think it almost was more scary that that's the state I was in. And then people feel even more helpless because they can't even console you. One of my questions is, as you kind of go through this next journey with this beautiful family you have, you know, how do you continue to honor the memory of your daughter? And how do you think about other parents going through this same thing? You know, what are the things that in the moment you know are going to be, if they're in the journey on themselves, like right now, if they're in a position similar to you or somewhat different, but has some similar themes, what would you say to them?
So this is such a great question. I first just want to say that I gave myself like panic attacks in the first couple weeks of her life, feeling like I had to do something or create something or start something in her name or her life wouldn't matter. And I just remember like just running myself ragged, trying to create. And you don't have to do anything. Just literally existing and living is carrying on your child with you and carrying that with you. So I just want to start off saying that if you want to do something, it'll come to you when the time is right. And do not force it. do not feel like you have to do anything.
Wise.
And I'm so glad I didn't, because nothing felt right.
Sure.
So it wasn't until a few months after that my husband and I were approached by Count the Kicks, which is a stillbirth prevention campaign. It's an app. Count the Kicks is an app itself that teaches women how to monitor their fetal movements in the third trimester to prevent stillbirth, because we know evidence has proved that changes in movements are the first and most important indicator that something is off. And so we also know that 1 in 4 stillbirths are preventable. And so this is a company that approached us, and their parent company is Healthy Birth Date. And so Ryan and I at first kind of teamed up with them because we were like, what a beautiful way to honor our daughter and to keep her name and spirit alive and to reach other families and help them, prevent them from ending up like Ryan and I and ending up going home with empty arms. And so this company is just doing incredible work and saving so many lives across the world. They're available in 16 languages. The app is available across the world. But so I just remember praying to God, you know, to send me something, and this was it. So Ryan and I have made it our mission now to educate and help research ways to prevent this from happening to others. So that was our personal way. And so we do a ton of work through them. Most recently, too, we were just in Washington, D.C., meeting with Kamala Harris's staff. We were just able to get legislation passed on stillbirth prevention. And my daughter's name is now in the vice president's office. We got to sign a sheet. So very magical, along with a ton of other babies who are gone too soon. But, you know, so this is just something that has snowballed since and kind of came to us. But we're always looking for more people to get involved. But so that was our personal way of doing that. So we now partner with them. I'm on the board of directors for Healthy Birthday. But I also just feel that we have to keep the conversation going. And I say this very delicately, but what I learned immediately when I lost my daughter is how alone and shameful I felt. And no one should sit in that, or no one should feel that way. And so at first, I didn't want to tell a soul that we had lost our daughter. You know, I wish there was a way, but because it was so public and our pregnancy was so public, our loss, therefore, was very public. And so that, I would later learn, was such a gift. I thought it was very cruel at first that I had to open it up. But the community that it opened it up to, and the hundreds to now thousands of people who reach out and share their story with us, one, you know, we get to know about all these beautiful babies who should be here, but learn their names, learn their stories, learn who their amazing parents are. But it shows just how much this is happening and how much we need support. And we need this conversation to be had. And we need for people to realize that this is happening way more than it should be. And there shouldn't be a stigma on talking about it. And we need resources. We need help. And so that's what we're pushing, is to blow the door off this, to have these conversations. There should be no fear. There should be no shame. We need each other. We need each other.
I love the metaphor too.
Yeah.
Blow the door open. That means let the light in. It really does. It means let the light in, right?
I do love that. Yes.
So we have to close up in about 1 minute, and I want to ask you one of those ridiculous questions.
Yes.
If you were going to have a credo or something laminated on a card that you carried around with you, what would that sentence be?
Leave others better than when you found them.
Emma, I can't thank you enough for coming on today and being as vulnerable as you have been. This is such an important topic. And, you know, our small podcast isn't going to blow the doors open, hopefully one day. But we hopefully will send a little crack with our viewership. At least we know moms watching. Hello. But no, seriously, I think stories like yours, especially for folks in the public eye, it makes such a difference from people to hear. And I'm just so happy to hear you have such a beautiful family. We want to thank our viewers for tuning in for another episode. Please, if you like the episode, give us a positive review or like us on your podcast platform of choice. Thank you again, Emma, and thank you for tuning in. Even when it hurts. Stronger than you know, stronger than when you feel cold out.
This podcast was produced by Amaze Media Labs.